businesses require risk. If you are not doing something risky at a business, you probably don't have a business that's going to be successful, because it means that somebody else has already done it, right? That's and there's tons of people, actually competitors, or it's commoditized, et cetera. Risk is where you find opportunity.
I don't have to have this virtual machine running on my own local laptop, have a massive RAM and massive hard disk, and so that I can store the virtual images that were so big in size.
Oh, yeah. The cost aspect of it, right? So if you're going out and saying you're getting a VMware license, okay, that's expensive. Obviously, I'm cheap, so I was more of a virtual box kid.
I'm just talking because we have enterprise, that's what I'm saying. But I was definitely virtual box as well. I wasn't going, but the images were so big. Like, I think one image would be 5 GB, 6 GB, sometimes 20 GB.
Yep.
That makes me think, I should look at if VirtualBox still does exist as a company. It'll be really interesting. Now with cloud almost 12 years in the making, have you heard of the space team? I know this is Cloud Security Podcast. It's not a space podcast, but it would make sense when I explain what space is. Space stands for SPACE, which is Security, Privacy, Automation, Compliance, and Engineering. Yes, that is the name of the team at Reddit. And we were lucky enough to have Frederick Lee of Flea, who is the CISO of Reddit, come and talk about how they're building that space team in their organization. They're revamping it as they move into 2024. Obviously, Frederick has been in the industry for a long time. So we spoke about the different challenges he's seen as the landscape of a hardware-run industry like Square, where he's worked in the past, or Block, as it's called these days, and also Twilio and Gusto, that the other two companies he's worked for, which are more software-based. How does the threat landscape differ? What are they saying in terms of planning for roadmaps, in terms of where Reddit sees itself in the future, and the security team at Reddit, where they see in the future as well? We spoke about some of the challenges as a CISO in general that people should look out for in 2024 and broader context of AI ML, specifically around privacy, because I definitely wanted to call out that in most of the conversation we had at reInvent and some of the other conferences over the last few months, one thing that kept coming up was that data security and API security is going to be top priority for a lot of leaders moving forward in 2024. So maybe a lot of you listening or watching this would already know this, but for people who have not, I would definitely say those two things, definitely keep that in your radar, because you would definitely find yourself having a lot of conversation about privacy, data, security, as well as compliance in data. And there's a lot more that comes in with the AI LLM, especially if you're using an LLM model in your organization, which, by the way, if you are interested in learning more about cybersecurity for AI, we also run a podcast called AI Cybersecurity Podcast, which you should be able to search for on YouTube and the audio platforms as always as well. But I just want to say thank you to Frederick and the team at Reddit for letting us do this interview. I really enjoyed this and had a great conversation. If you know someone who's planning to become a CISO of an organization like a B2C or a B2B, or even a company like Reddit, what does that look like? What are some of the challenges they face? This is a great episode for them. And maybe if that's their plan for 2024, want to become a CISO, I would definitely share this with them as well. As always, if you're here for the second or third time, I would really appreciate it if you can drop us a review or rating on the podcast platforms, or drop us a comment over here if you're watching on YouTube, so that you can at least know that you enjoy the episode or like them. And we should keep bringing more people like this. And that is a signal for us to know that, yes, we should bring more people like Frederick and others who can come and share their experience and talk more about what the space looks like at that level. And I love the fact that I think the way I describe it is more like he's protecting the front door of the internet. And a lot of people who have probably been in the industry for a long time, we even spoke about VirtualBox. For people who may remember, I'm not going to Google if VirtualBox still does exist as a company, but it definitely is very interesting to talk to folks who have had a lot of experience in this field and talk about what they see as upcoming and what they have seen as challenges in different industries like hardware, software. And what does security really mean by allowing the company to take risk is what the job of the, it's not just to protect against risk, it's how do I enable an organization to take risk so that they can jump on the next opportunity, which brings the most business value. On that note, I would let you enjoy the episode, and I will see you in the next episode of Cloud Security Podcast. Enjoy, and I'll talk to you soon. Peace.
Hey, what's up, everyone? Welcome to another episode of Cloud Security Podcast. Today, we have Frederick Lee. Hey, man, welcome to the show.
Yeah, it is great to be here. And please feel free to call me Flea. I consider us friends, and all my friends call me Flea. So.
Awesome. All right, I'll call you Flea. As long as you don't flee away from the conversation, I would flee.
Yeah, I'm security. We flee towards things, man. We run towards the fire.
That's awesome. So Flea, could you introduce yourself to the audience as well? So for people who may not have heard of me before.
Yeah. So my government name is Frederick Lee, as you already mentioned. Most people call me Flea. I am currently the CISO of Reddit, which is a social media platform where we help build communities and bring humans together for a real genuine conversation.
And I guess obviously you've had some years in cybersecurity, but what was like your kickoff point for your career in cybersecurity? And was there anything specific that helped you prepare for this role?
What helped me prepare for this role may have been my youth. So I was one of those dirty hackers, and probably more than anything, just, you know, yet another script kiddie back when I was in middle school and high school, etc. I am a little bit older than USC, as you can see. As somebody who grew up and came to the internet probably in, you might actually consider the early days, meaning the late 80s, early 90s, et cetera, there actually weren't jobs in cybersecurity outside of working for the government. And I'm not really the kind of person that should be working for a nation state. How I actually got into security, though, was somewhat by accident, because I was one of those kids who was like, I always considered myself somewhat of a hacker, and even more so a tinkerer, or what I like to refer to as aggressive curiosity.
I love that. And so
I did a bunch of .com stuff in like the early .com days, you think about like pets.com, that kind of stuff. And when the .com crash happened, Bank of America just went across the country and just started hiring all these .com refugees. So I ended up at Bank of America working on the authentication infrastructure as well as the PKI. And so I was just hired as just a developer. But while I was at B of A, I discovered an internal vulnerability. And the internal vulnerability was actually pretty bad. And I was pretty sure, hey, I'm probably going to get fired for this, but I should tell somebody, right?
Yeah, of course.
And so when I told my boss, and when it made it to the CISO, instead of Flea getting fired, Bank of America was like, hey, we have somebody here that really wants to dig in and actually find some vulnerabilities and actually help us make the company better. And this is at a time when online banking was just getting started.
Right.
And so Bank of America, instead of firing me, decided to start an application security team. And at the time, we were actually one of the first corporations, and even more so one of the first financial institutions, to have a dedicated permanent application security team. And that's how I got into it. Because prior to that, I was happy just being a developer, writing code, tinkering. I'm more of a low-level firmware kind of person, C is my preferred language. And so I was happy doing what I was already doing. And I just wanted to make sure that, hey, somebody else besides the bank should know that we have this pretty bad vulnerability. And it was actually hats off to Bank of America, because that was at a time when kids like me were just getting fired and put in jail. Yeah.
So that's kind of how I got started. But I was going to also ask, it's fairly interesting also because you've jumped maybe into a lot of nuances there, which I would love to dig into as well. Because some of the trends come and go. Com boom was a thing, and then a few more things came in, and then cloud came in as well. And being cloud security podcast, I think one probably, and I think now since you've seen a few trends, how would you define cloud security as a leader these days?
Oh, wow. I have a horrible answer for you. And the horrible answer is that cloud security actually didn't force us to do anything new. It did force us to realize what we actually should have been doing all the time. So you think about it, it's not just because I had a data center at Bank of America didn't mean that data center was actually secure, at least not in the way that it should have been. The great thing about cloud security is, one, it actually forces you to actually think about all those attack vectors. You have to think about the entire infrastructure. It also forces you to think at scale in a way that maybe we didn't previously. But there are so many great things that actually came along with cloud security, or just clouds in general. I actually even had a talk at Twilio, because Twilio was the first hardcore cloud company I worked at. And I remember giving a talk at Twilio for other security people about how I learned to love the cloud and not be afraid, because this was actually somewhat still super early days. When I was at Twilio, it was Netflix and Twilio with regards to AWS and people playing around in AWS security. But you got so many great things, because now we're actually thinking about almost provable security, because you could actually turn a lot of the things we actually like to have previous with data centers, et cetera, just into code. And we could actually say, oh, no, I can actually go back and look at this config and actually prove that this VPC is secure. At the time, VPCs were new, or like in some of the things you're actually doing on the EC2 side, et cetera. And so that's the reason why I say it didn't really change, but it did make obvious the things that we should have been doing. Like I said, the biggest change probably was on the positive with regards to accessibility and that ability to actually turn code into policy and vice versa, or rather policy into code. And that's just been such a huge win for people that are in the security space. I would say the other thing that maybe about cloud security is that it provided an opportunity for more people to get into security. because you needed a data center to get started, right? And you didn't even need your own home lab, or maybe you actually had a bunch of VMs. You could literally go and say, hey, I'm going to register for a free tier at AWS. And with that free tier at AWS, I now actually get to learn all these things, which is just amazing and phenomenal, which is, and I personally, that was probably one of the other big positive changes for security in the cloud in general, is just that accessibility around it.
Yeah, I think 100% on the second point as well, that the bar to enter cybersecurity could be a bit more lower now, thanks to cloud security as well. Because I remember there used to be like this whole thing around, hey, buy VMware licenses, have your own virtual host, and people are trying to learn CCNA and all that as well. And I'm not saying those concepts are not important. Those concepts are definitely important to know networking. But the fact that I don't have to have this virtual machine running on my own local laptop, have a massive RAM and massive hard disk, and so that I can store the virtual images that were so big in size.
Oh, yeah. The cost aspect of it. So if you're going out and saying you're getting a VMware license, okay, that's expensive. Obviously, I'm cheap, so I was more of a virtual box kid.
We have enterprise, that's what I'm saying. But I was definitely virtual box as well. I wasn't going, but the images were so big. Like, I think one image would be 5 GB, 6 GB, sometimes 20 GB.
Yep. And think about this, like, you know, it's not just about the actual computing capacity that you have. You also get into bandwidth concerns in as well. It's what does it mean for me to actually download this? I am fortunate to live in the Bay Area, so that means I have great internet and great internet providers around here. But if you're like maybe in the middle of nowhere, or you don't have all that access, downloading 5 gig Linux ISOs is painful. Whereas actually just spinning up an instance in AWS is cheap, easy, and quick. And you get to experiment. You also get to fail faster in the cloud, which allows you to actually also learn faster.
Actually, that makes me think I should look at if VirtualBox still does exist as a company. It'll be really interesting. Now with cloud almost 12 years in the making. But you also touched on Twilio, and I think you did some work in Square as well.
Yep.
I'm curious, having such a vast experience, do you find that the threat landscape between, say, how a CISO would operate in a hardware industry versus a, now you're in a software industry, how different are the landscape in terms of the threats?
Oh, yeah. Like, hardware is fun and fascinating, but it is also a little nerve-wracking. Because when you're dealing with hardware, your supply chain becomes much more important, but also much harder to control, right? Mm. And most of the time when you're building hardware, especially you're building hardware at scale, you're not using your own factories, right? And oftentimes you might even have a factory in a region of the world where the government might be potentially hostile or at least not friendly. You don't have some of the same controls and some of the same tools that you might normally have. So you have to really think about what your anchors of trust are going to be. How do you actually want to allow people access while also still not trusting them? So it ratchets up a lot of some of the fundamental things that you would normally want to have in a security program. But it definitely makes you double down on how you think about things around detection and response. And in particular, like early detection signals and things like that. And all the telemetry that you actually really want to have, because now you're actually dealing with hardware. You want to be able to say, hey, you know what? We have to actually put keys on these devices. I want to make sure that all my HSMs are actually secure and that there's actually tamper detection and things like that around these devices. And also tamper detection in the actual hardware that you're building itself. Now, obviously, the kind of hardware that we built at Square, I guess what is now known as Block, I'm still calling it Square, though. And because that was somewhat sensitive and critical infrastructure itself, that definitely made some of our challenges a little bit more complex. But I would argue to say that a lot of other companies had some of those similar challenges, even if they maybe had a somewhat different profile. The other thing that is challenging, which actually being a CISO when you're dealing with hardware, is hardware mistakes are much more expensive. So you really do have to nail some of that fundamental engineering around QA and testing, et cetera, because you can't bring hardware back after you've shipped it, right? Obviously, you can actually do a bunch of things with firmware, but even doing firmware updates is expensive because firmware relies upon the customer having to do some action, right? Oh, they have to be connected. Yeah. They have to be online. They have to actually accept this update, et cetera. And so you get all of these things that you have to actually think about. And you have to also think about, what does this mean in my ecosystem if somebody has old firmware trying to connect to this service that is actually transfer sensitive data? And trying to also figure out that customer support aspect of it as well, because oftentimes you're building hardware, which has a lot of great security built into it, but you're giving that hardware to somebody that is not a security expert. And so you have to make it what I like to call lovable security, meaning that all the security that actually is built in has to be super easy to understand and super easy for somebody to actually recover from when they actually make mistakes.
Oh, because also the only option they would have is they'll call customer support. They're not calling security. They're calling customer support.
Yeah, they're calling, which makes total sense, right? It's like, oh, hey, I bought this thing. Maybe I bought it from Amazon. Maybe I bought it from Square's website. Maybe I even bought it from Best Buy. But regardless, I need somebody else I'm talking to. People's general inclination is to just call the person on the box or call the person that they bought it from.
That's right.
So you really have to make sure that the security is rock solid.
Yeah, I think I also remember the fact that being a B2B, B2C, like I imagine because Square is obviously selling to like cafes and all these businesses. So there's a whole B2B aspect there. And Twilio and other companies, they're all B2C as well. So all of them have B2B and B2C element. Yep. I'm sure Reddit does as well. In terms of the B2B and B2C leadership kind of space, where is there like, to what you said about hardware, supply chain has become super important, whereas software companies which are focused on consumers or otherwise as well, software companies are more software first, like developer first kind of industries.
Yeah.
In terms of risk level itself, is there a difference that you find between a B2B, B2C kind of a thing, or what becomes more important in that context between the two?
I think on the B2C side, it actually does become different because you have to think of a much broader user base, right? Yeah. And there aren't as many assumptions that you can make. So like when you're dealing with B2B, a business owner intrinsically is thinking a lot about risk. And they have a lot of skin in the game with regards to running and operating their business. Essentially, their incentives and motivations to be secure are much higher. Mm-hmm. And it also means that they are willing to take on a higher shared security burden. Like they will think, somebody said that my company would be better if I use 2FA when I log into this product. Oh, so a business owner is going to do that, even if there's actually friction involved. Whereas in the B2C side, things like, you know, MFA adoption can be a little bit more difficult because people are actually thinking about convenience and things like that a little bit more. And so it does change your attack landscape. And things like, think about how your normal consumer might be managing their passwords, et cetera. That also makes it a little bit more difficult. Whereas I said, like on a business side with B2B, there's just a heightened sense of wanting to protect your own business. So business owners are generally much more diligent there. The other side of that, though, is on the B2B side, they have much higher expectations. They want to see things like a SOC 2 certification or ISO 27001 certification. Your consumers may not have that same education, and so they don't have that same level of demand, and they may not always be as knowledgeable about what they should be asking from their supplier from a security standpoint.
I'm not even going to go into the whole hardware with the certificate attached to the whole pin to the device and stuff as well. That definitely gets a bit more trickier. Okay, now I understand the difference between B2B and B2C, but I also understand the challenges because I can't imagine telling a shopkeeper or a cafe owner doing MFA. That would be like, why the hell? I just want Ashish to come and pay for his coffee and move on with life and not do a 2FA in front of him. So I'm also curious in terms of, it's been 5 months since you joined Reddit. How has your priorities shifted in the last few months of joining Reddit?
Yeah. So when I joined Reddit, probably one of my bigger priorities was how we're actually thinking about security here at Reddit, security and privacy in particular. And previously, our teams were a little bit dispersed. And so one of the first things I wanted to do, actually, I wanted to bring back all of the security lions. I wanted to reform Voltron. And in fact, one of the first things we did was actually bring the team all back together, all the people actually thinking about security, privacy, compliance. And we decided that we actually wanted to just have a rebrand, essentially actually relaunch what security meant at Reddit. And in fact, we don't even refer to ourselves as security anymore. We actually refer to ourselves as space, which stands
like
for
literally SPACE, space.
Yes, yes. Security, privacy, and compliance engineering. And part of that, actually, we wanted to have a really big focus, one, on the idea that, no, this is actually an engineering organization. We are building the security and the security improvements that you wanted to see. We are active participants in building the infrastructure and the experience at Reddit. The other thing is that we wanted to defang some of the associations that people might have when they think of security or when they think of privacy or when they think of compliance. Normally, people might think of those as being like no functions or people that are gates, et cetera. Nobody thinks of a space cadet as being somebody that is trying to slow you down. Everybody knows that anybody interested in space is interested in pushing and pushing, accelerating boundaries, actually essentially escaping the gravity of whatever is actually in place, and to also build things that are actually going to take us into the future. So you think about what the space program has actually brought to us humans in general. Now we have Tang and we have automatic doors, etc. But it was really to actually help people understand that this really is about a building organization and a organization that is going to build safety and human experiences into the product itself to actually help us go. Obviously at Reddit, we always want to talk about things going to the moon, but we actually want to go further than just the moon here in space. So that's actually probably one of my big focuses right now is actually the reshaping and the retooling of that culture here at Reddit for our space program to be a lot more prominent and to be a much stronger enabling function and an accelerating function, as opposed to maybe your more traditional kind of, hey, we have a bunch of spreadsheets and checkboxes, and we're going to tell you whether or not you can or can't ship. Space cadets like to ship. That's how we actually get into outer space, man.
I love the whole rocket analogy as well. So how are we going in? We're putting it in a rocket and just shipping it.
Yes.
So it totally works with the engineering world as well. Ship it
as
it comes in. I also probably would also ask, in terms of the privacy and compliance, we have largely a CISO technical kind of audience as well. And a lot of people roll their eyes when they see here privacy and compliance. But I think it's super important, and especially in the context of the scale. And if I can ask you for a brief, how do you define privacy and compliance in this context for the space you're in? Not literally the space you're in, but like, no pun intended. No, I'm going to be like, no pun intended with space. But how do you define privacy and compliance when you look at it from a Reddit perspective?
Yeah, so privacy is all about making sure that we honor our Redditors' preferences when it comes to how their data is shared, right? We are a data custodian, not a data owner. And so when you think about privacy, it's really about having your own internal Lorax that's actually speaking for the users. It's saying, hey, no, this is what a human actually wants, and this is what a human deserves. And in particular, we know that the more that we can actually protect privacy at Reddit, the better it is for Redditors, because people are then with privacy, you have freedom to actually truly express yourself, right? You have freedom to actually explore who you are. You actually have freedom to actually engage in conversations that previously you may have been afraid of. Compliance is actually one of my more exciting topics because to me, compliance is all about telling the story of what your security program is actually doing, right? And if your security program is doing well, then compliance almost comes by default. Now, compliance is also great as like an internal coach for somebody who might think about somebody who wants to run a marathon, right? If you actually want to run a marathon, if you never ran one before, you actually want to work with somebody who can actually say, hey, this is what your pace is. Hey, this is, you know, what your splits are. Oh, hey, you started from the couch. Now you can actually run a 5K. Oh, hey, I'm going to give you something else. You can actually now run a 10K. Compliance also helps lead companies and helps lead them to actually be the things that you want to do, and helps us hold ourselves accountable, right? Mm-hmm. I'm not going to lie that compliance is also a great business enabler, right? Because when you can actually tell the story of your security program, it makes it easier for other people to actually trust you. And when they trust you, they can actually do business with you. And even more so, they can actually do more business. And maybe things that they previously were hesitant to share with you, they're now more comfortable to share with you. But I think a lot of people, when they think of compliance, they just think of auditors and they think, oh, hey, this is somebody actually is here to get me in trouble or whatever. No, this is actually somebody here to actually help you improve so you can actually get better. And that's where that more of that kind of like coach and trainer analogy comes into play.
And would you say, is it different to how you would have approached security in other companies that you've worked in? Like the approach you're using with privacy and security in Reddit?
It's not different from what I did at Gusto or at Square. It is different than where I've been at other companies. And it's different because privacy is now an actual industry. And I'm not saying that privacy previously wasn't, but it was one of those things we actually just let fall on the wayside. It was like an afterthought. And we thought that, oh, your security kids, your dirty hackers, et cetera, the kids that went to DEF CON, maybe the kids that used to work for Alex Stamos. And these are all great people, but we don't always think about privacy in the same way that some of our privacy experts do. And our privacy experts often think more holistically about that entire human journey, as opposed to sometimes what we normally fall back onto as maybe just like your generic security nerds, where we think more about like systems and networks, et cetera, as opposed to that human experience.
Actually, that's interesting. Is there an example? Because maybe I'm guilty of this as well. I always think of privacy as the fact that the systems where my data is stored is kept secure. That's like the layman definition for from a technical
perspective.
What's an example for something like this, so people can actually get to a bit more deeper level for what it actually means? Because clearly it's to what you said, it's an industry itself.
And the reason why it's flipped, and I love what you said, hey, how you think about it, hey, is my data secure? Part of that's, okay, secure from who? The other is, even though your data is secure, are people treating the data in the way you would like to have it treated? And that's actually one of those big differences when we talk about actually security versus privacy. Security is all about, hey, we have data. We are making sure that certain people don't have access to that data, but it doesn't maybe dive as much into how the data itself is being utilized. Privacy also adds that. And that's actually a really important aspect. And an analogy I would give is one that's actually super common. Hey, you have a cell phone. Your cell phone, you probably have calls. You probably have text messages. You probably have some friends that you hang out with at the pub. And maybe y'all have some inside jokes. Do you want some random person at T-Mobile or Orange or whatever actually reading through those text messages? No. Those text messages are secure. They're actually stored in T-Mobile, Orange's infrastructure, and all those proper protections that are there. But privacy actually comes in, okay, now that T-Mobile has my SMS messages talking about whatever random bet I have with my pub mates, now we actually get to talk about whether or not T-Mobile gets to look at that. Now we get to talk about whether or not T-Mobile gets to share that with an advertiser. Now we get to talk about whether or not T-Mobile gets to share that with a nation state of some form. And that's where the privacy comes in. And it's making sure that there's somebody inside of that organization advocating for the user and advocating about how data should be treated on behalf of the user, as opposed to people that are focused more about how the data should be leveraged and utilized by the business.
I think this is probably an important conversation also because of the popularity of AI ML as well, where data is probably the number one thing. Like so many people we spoke to at AWS reInvent, a lot of CISOs mentioned that they have now got data security as an API security as an item in their budget for next year, or the planning that they're doing for next year. And data probably would continue to play quite an important role. Now with privacy also, to what you said, I feel it's very much linked to that as well, where what are people or what are companies going to do with the data that we have provided them? Is there an AI ML on it to improve service or maybe otherwise? Have you seen the cybersecurity industry kind of change with the popularity of AI ML?
I have seen it change, and there's some very interesting work. And for your listeners, and also for you, you should totally get Caleb Seema on here. I think he's actually been on here before. He's done some great and interesting work with AI, and in particular, some of the stuff actually was just announced that the Cloud Security Alliance is also doing from an AI standpoint. Most of it's actually focused on protection, right? And there's actually a lot of interesting and great stuff going on there. I think the more exciting thing happening for security and AI, though, is utilization. And some of the things that, in particular, LLMs are actually providing for us, and some of the things that is allowing us to essentially level the playing field on certain things, right? I'm not the world's biggest Splunk fan, and I don't think anybody out there would ever actually accuse me of that. But you can now have people that may have never actually used Splunk that can use an LLM to actually say, well, this is the data I'm looking for. I don't know how to actually write this query in Splunk. Yeah. So AI, write this query for me because I know what I'm looking for. And that's going to be a huge thing for the security industry because it means we can actually get more curious minds into some of these problems and actually investigate. I am hopeful and optimistic that AI is actually going to allow us to bring more people into security as opposed to less, because now we can actually have more people asking interesting questions without the need to actually go back and learn a bunch of foundational things that, while relevant and fun at the time, may not be as relevant for somebody that has a specific objective outside of just learning, right? If your objective is to say, hey, I want to see AI machine, please tell me what are all the users associated with this IP address. Now, you can totally actually do that as a query in Splunk or BigQuery or Chronicle or Panther for those that are actually out there on the Panther platform. You can do that on those platforms, but it also requires you actually learn these things. Whereas I can actually have even somebody who might even be a new grad or even somebody who may not even come from a university background from an educational standpoint, they would still have the knowledge to say, hey, I want to ask this question. And being able to actually have that ease of use is just going to be game changing for us. And we're already seeing tons and tons of people actually hopping into that. So
I love it, because I think the moment you mentioned it, the one example that came to my mind was these days, whenever a SOC analyst or someone who's in the SOC team sees an IP address being a threat, they have to understand the context of what the hell is an IP address in the first place.
Yes.
But then which system? Oh, it's a Windows system, Linux system. There's so many layers of knowledge they have to go through to even triage to the point of now I'm ready to investigate and know whether this is a investigation that I should raise an alert on or should I just go with the false positive. But someone who's coming from, and this is maybe where diversity could come into as well, someone from another field, completely different to cybersecurity, yes, come in and go, hey, God gets an alert for IP address. Is this something I should look at? And the AI machine goes and does that thing and goes, no, actually, you know what? It's a false positive. So you move on with your life. That would be amazing.
No, it will be amazing. And even for the people that consider themselves like nerdier, et cetera, AI is bringing to the forefront some technologies that we in security should have been paying attention to anyway, right? For the people that actually have dove in deep on the LLM side, a lot of them are actually super excited about all these great vector databases that are actually being, you know, tossed out there, Weaviate, et cetera. And those are awesome because we are now introducing some cybersecurity professionals into things like, hey, this is a good way to actually do anomaly detection, right? Okay, you have a vector database and you're actually putting in all this telemetry. Some of those anomalous instances are very obvious in a way that it wasn't for us previously. And so just giving that accessibility is now even more leveling the playing field and giving some of these small security teams oversized large security team skill sets.
I agree. And I think just on the Caleb Siva thing as well, I'm going to plug him. So him and I are running another podcast called AI Cybersecurity Podcast because we realize there's actually not enough conversations of cybersecurity. And because he's the AI safety chairperson for CSA. And so him and I started that AI Cybersecurity Podcast. But I think 100% Caleb is doing some really interesting work. And I'll definitely encourage the listeners and viewers to check out AI Cybersecurity Podcast because I think we're definitely trying to. Because there's a lot of confusion in the whole AI ML as to an LLM, what the hell is LLM and all of that as well. So this is maybe a good point to bring up. In terms of becoming a CISO, how does the remit kind of change from being an individual contributor or a team manager now to a CISO level? Because I imagine a lot of people would hear, oh, so Flea is a CISO of Reddit. And in terms of the remit changes from overseeing a cybersecurity to an entire organization, how has that kind of changed? In what way has that kind of evolved for you?
Yeah, some of the things that definitely changes in when you move from an IC up through the leadership ranks, et cetera, is scope of your impact and also scope about what you truly can care about. I run a Kube cluster at home, much to wife's disappointment.
Self-hosted one or one of those managed ones?
No, self-hosted. Dude, I'm old school. Okay. I got a horrible rack that's incredibly embarrassing. It's way oversized for my personal needs.
No wonder your wife is upset about it.
But it's one of those things, though, as a CISO, I'm not supposed to be in the weeds. And I have to actually think at a much higher level. So I can have opinions about Kubernetes, right, personally. But really, my opinion should be mostly based on what kind of outcomes are we actually trying to get and helping to actually drive those and also thinking about those holistically and even more so thinking about it from a pragmatic standpoint. Like the higher up you go, the more necessary it is for you to actually become pragmatic. And because you have to actually take in the entire business context. And one of the things that I learned quickly as I was going up from IC to manager, et cetera, is that businesses require risk. If you are not doing something risky in a business, you probably don't have a business that's going to be successful because it means that somebody else has already done it, right? That's and there's right. tons of people, actually competitors, or it's actually commoditized, et cetera. Risk is where you find opportunity. And so as a CISO, you really have to actually think about, hey, what kind of risk do we want to enable for the business? And oftentimes as an IC, you're thinking about what kind of risk do I want to prevent? And that's actually a fairly significant mind shift when you actually think about, okay, hey, I as a CISO, my job is to be a company builder. Right. Yeah. And part of my role from the company building standpoint is helping the company see the risk, contextualize those risks, understand those risks, and also figure out how to actually mitigate some of those so we can actually accelerate and move forward. So you think about what Reddit does, right? Reddit says, hey, we're not going to get into your business. We're not going to do any kind of, hey, you got to show me a ID so I can do some name verification and all this crazy stuff that some of the other platforms do. Instead, we say, oh, no, come one, come all. And when you do that, yeah, that is a little bit riskier. It's riskier than what other people do, but it allows us to actually build something great like Reddit, where you can actually have all these communities that are actually so distinct. The analogy I've given to other people is you think back to the 90s, et cetera, when e-commerce first came into play. Do you know how dumb it is to put your credit card on the internet? Just think about that at the time.
Yeah.
But somebody said, hey, this is an opportunity. And there is a risk here. But if we mitigate this risk, look at all this business value that we actually unlock. And even more so, think about all this human value that we now can unlock. So you think about things like begrudgingly even saying the blockchain. I like the blockchain. I don't like the crypto kids. But things like that are enabling technologies that took something that was risky, de-risked it, or at least reduced some of that risk, made it manageable. And now you have all these great opportunities. And that's one of those big distinctions and one of those big maturation points for somebody actually seeking to be a CISO.
So talking about allowing businesses to take risk, in terms of your long-term and short-term kind of viewpoint that you're looking at, because a lot of people now, beginning of 2024, a lot of people are looking at, okay, this is what's going to be my roadmap for, I guess, at least for the next few years, maybe hopefully short-term, long-term. How are you approaching this differently this time, the whole short-term versus long-term roadmaps?
Oh, I am more of a big idea person. So I generally actually just think just in long-term. And recognizing that, especially as a startup kid, short-term always is going to be flexible, right? And there might be just things you actually have to react to in the moment. But that's the reason why I focus more on the long-term, because it makes it easier for me to actually determine what are the compromises I'm willing to make. Hey, what are some of the adjustments I'm willing to make? Because I actually want to make sure that I'm always hitting that long-term target. And that's part of the reason why I try not to overly optimize for short-term, because oftentimes when you're overly optimizing for short-term, it's like your classic target fixation. You'll now end up starting steering towards that direction as opposed to the original direction you're actually wanting to go to. I do think for a lot of people in 2024, though, including Reddit, obviously the economy's turning around. There's going to be more people online. There's going to be more commerce. Bandwidth is getting cheaper. There's more and more devices actually coming to the internet. It turns out we're also still making humans. All these things means a desire for more capacity, but it also means, potentially more attackers and things like that. I think what a lot of people, though, as you said, are going to be focused on is, hey, what can I do to accelerate my existing security team? Recognizing that budgets are still somewhat tight, even as we're actually going into 2024. So I think you are going to see a lot more people actually dabbling in the LLM space. And that's obviously something that I'm interested in with my team as well. So you think about some of the things you actually just get from that standpoint. Think about your classic like security questionnaires, right? Yeah. Why should I have to fill that out? Why can't I just have AI actually do that for me? Even if somebody's format is actually different than what I've seen before. Yeah. Hey, I have some great salespeople and they occasionally have to actually talk to our customers about security concerns. Isn't it better if they actually have an LLM that they can actually talk to you and say, hey, what is our policy around this? Because I have a customer asking about it. And so I might be overly enthusiastic, but when I think about the future, I think about all the great things that we will have available and what we actually can accomplish and what we can leverage there.
I look forward to a future where we'll just give a ChatGPT prompt to an auditor as they walk in, and basically they have access to everything. And because it's really interesting, because you know how auditors are usually painted as people who are always untrusting of the answer that the people were given. I'm sure Ashish is trying to hide something here, but when it's a system talking, I wonder if they'll be more trustworthy, because you can't talk back. They're giving some more clarification, keeps giving information going. It'd be really interesting, and I'm as optimistic as you are about the possible future for this as well. So that's a great answer. And talking about maybe on a related note, a lot of CISOs probably listening to this planning, and maybe first-time CISOs as well, who are planning their roadmap. Are there any trends that you think they should look out for? Maybe they might not be looking at it right now, but they should look out for as you look for the long-term roadmap, as you suggested.
Oh, I still think that we as an industry are very early in everything they're actually doing, from processes, how we think about people, et cetera. And I think like some of the things though, I think that people should be keeping in mind is, what can you do to accelerate your business? And what are some of the things that maybe that we traditionally had a ton of people working on that we should now reconsider and leveraging software for? The auditor question is actually a great one, right? So think about how much time you spent in the past with yourself or your team, et cetera. Because I don't know, you've been a CISO also, having to go through some of this. Hey, we have an assessment coming up. Oh, I got to go gather all this evidence. Previously, you either had to actually build a bunch of tooling yourself if you were a more advanced company, but the default was more than likely, oh, you had a bunch of people that had spreadsheets. They were walking around asking people questions, saying, hey, I need to see all the GitHub access because I need to do an access review. Hey, can you actually give me a dump of that? I'm going to go through it manually. Now we have companies like Hyperproof, SafeBase, Vanta, formerly BikeCheck, et cetera, who are now actually doing all this automation and integration around. And I do think it's actually still something that a lot of our CISOs need to actually be diving into is, hey, what are tools that I can actually look at that are actually going to accelerate what I do today and to make my people more valuable than they were yesterday? And that's where I still think we have a journey from getting more and more CISOs to think like builders and engineers rather than just as like gate and governance functions.
talking about journeys as well, what keeps you motivated? Obviously, now you have a challenging role yourself, and obviously in an industry at large as well. What keeps you motivated despite knowing how challenging these roles can be?
Oh, what keeps me motivated is that I'm an angry optimist. And I would argue to say that anybody that is in security for more than 5 years is definitely at this point an angry optimist, because you're in security because you actually believe that there is a better future, right? A more perfect thing that we can actually have.
Yeah.
The anger is like, I really want to see that future. And so that's actually one of the things that actually motivates me. Like, I believe in the true internet, which is actually a large reason why I decided to actually join Reddit, because Reddit is probably one of those last real bastions of the true internet. And so that makes me motivated, because I want to protect that. I want to have things like Mastodon flourish. I want to have things like Wikimedia flourish. I want to have things like Reddit flourish, et cetera, because that brings people together.
Yeah,
it
yeah.
democratizes knowledge. It democratizes access. And anytime you can give humans more capabilities and more equality, the better the world becomes. And I get excited when I talk about it, and I get excited when I wake up, because I get to work on this. I get to actually help make this better for other people out there.
You get to secure the front page of the internet, I guess. Yes. You would call it as well. Yeah, I guess a lot of people for a long time have had Reddit as their default homepage as well. The subreddit is like a thing where most conversations, at least I know, at least the tech friends that I've had, all of us have had that. Maybe another part of journey is also, where do you see them go from a CISO role as well? Because a lot of people are almost going, hey, I've done CISO role for X number of years. I've been in a startup, or I've been in a medium-sized company. Where do you normally see people go on from becoming a CISO? What else is out there?
Like a couple of things that you're seeing that actually are new is people, one, really now recognizing the strength of some of these CISOs, right? And so you're seeing CISOs now become CIOs. So it's very common now for CISOs to own IT and own a lot of those things, et cetera. So for example, at Gusto, the CIO reported to me. And it makes sense when you actually think about it, because so much more now what we actually think of from a classic CIO standpoint is actually about doing security capabilities for the company, right?
Yeah,
Hey, we got to provision some SaaS apps. Oh, that sounds a lot like a security issue. Oh, hey, we have to grant access to all these users. Damn, that sounds a lot like a security issue also. Oh, hey, we got to issue these endpoint devices, and we got to do a bunch of stuff to actually make sure those endpoint devices are safe. Oh, that's definitely a security function. The other thing that you see, which is actually I'm getting super excited about, and I'm super proud of these individuals, is you're actually seeing a lot of CISOs become CTOs. And so look at GitHub and Mike, and obviously coming from the Duo background, it's always great, but CISOs are now more and more coming from origins where they were actually engineers and practitioners themselves, right? Mm. And so they already understand what it means to actually build a great engineering organization, because their security organizations are just engineering organizations.
Yep.
And you're seeing them actually take that practice, that knowledge, et cetera, and that discipline to actually scale towards these larger engineering organizations and actually help shape some of these products. Think about Fox, Melody over there. She used to be the CISO, and now she's the CTO at Fox, right? And those are actually just great things, because also just seeing, hey, it turns out these CISOs have a wealth of skill sets, and probably more so than a lot of other C-level execs. Being a CISO requires you to have a lot of knowledge about all parts of the business in order to actually be effective. And because of the nature of how businesses operate, you have to have deep knowledge about how a technology and a tech organization actually works, which actually is making a lot of these CISOs phenomenal CTOs.
Yeah, oh, great examples as well. That's like the last question that I had as well. I've got three, maybe four fun questions for you, so people get to know you a bit more as well. First one being, what do you spend most time on when you're not working on tech things like your self-hosted Kubernetes and anything else?
I was going to say, what am I spending most of my time on when I'm not working, which at this point is Kubernetes and fixing Home Assistant. But I love being outdoors. Almost anything outdoors related, I love road cycling. I love mountain biking. It is now snowboard season here in Northern California, and that's probably what I'm going to be doing for hopefully the next couple of months, depending on how many snow dances are out there. So please have your listeners do some snow dances for Flea so that he can actually get enough powder to actually ride until at least April. Yeah, so that's what I like to do. Also, I enjoy cooking. I am a video game player. I've been spending way too much time playing Genshin Impact. So also have your listeners do some Primo Gym dances for me so I can get some good pulls.
I would definitely do that. I think you and I are already friends. I'm a snowboarder as well. So you and I are already friends at that level, man. I think I'm hoping for some snow as well. But unfortunately for me, I have to go to Europe. Apparently, UK doesn't get enough snow.
Yeah. There's nothing but rocks in the UK.
That's pretty much what I've heard. I'm like, oh, wait, I have to go to the... But then the sound of going to the Italian Alps or French Alps sounds much better than going to like up in a mountain somewhere. So I'll take that position. The second question that I have for you is, what is something that you're proud of, but that is not on your social media?
What is something that I'm proud of that's not on my social media? My parents. I am deeply proud of my parents. I would argue to say I have some of the most amazing parents in the world, right? My mother and father both, and for the people that are listening to this as opposed to like you see in an audio, I am Black. My parents are Black. Being Black citizens that actually grew up in the United States, they went to segregated schools. They didn't have the same access that I have now. Part of the reason why I am so excited and passionate about computers is that it actually was a passion of my father's, and he wasn't allowed to do it because of racism here in the United States. But my parents overcame all of that, right? Wow. And they made sure all of their kids actually went to college. They made sure that all of us were dedicated to education and self-improvement. And they also made sure that we were all dedicated to trying to actually be good humans. And probably one of the most important things I learned from my parents was that anger is a gift. And you can use that passion to actually make things better. And that if you are actually making the world better, and if you wake up every day with the goal of helping somebody, you're on the right track and you're doing the right thing. And you can actually live with yourself at night. And I'm just super, super proud of both of my parents just because of all the struggles that they have went through, all the things they actually sacrificed for me and my siblings to actually get to the places where we are. And it just all the great support they still give me now.
I'm going to make sure the recording of this goes to your parents as well. You get some brownie points there. But definitely shout out to your parents for raising good kids as well. And to your point, the angry optimist is still working through their way as a CISO candidate as well. So the anger is still being channeled at the right place. It's pretty awesome. All right. Third question is, what's your favorite cuisine or restaurant that you can share?
Oh, what is my favorite cuisine? Oh, that's so difficult. But I would normally say probably just steak. I'm a very simple person. But if it's not steak, then it is probably brisket, because that's actually one of the things I like to do over the weekends. I enjoy smoking various meats. Yeah.
Wait, what's the? Because I feel like some people actually have that meter for, oh, I want 24 hours, 48 hours. Or is there like a time period for what's the best time for the smoked meat that you enjoy?
Oh, man, it's an organic experience. Every brisket is different. But no, like normally it takes me it's generally going to be at least a 12-hour ordeal. Okay, or like 12 to 16 hours, yeah.
And by the way, I'm going to throw in a bonus fourth one because you've been in the industry for a while. And you're one of the few people as well who remember the waterfall days. Now, when I walk into conversations, a lot of people are still into Agile.
Oh, yeah.
And I talk about waterfall or even like anything before that. So what do you miss about the good old days of waterfall?
What do I miss about the good old days? What do I miss? Oh, geez. I will say this. Waterfall definitely at least introduces some positive pauses, right? Where you can say, hey, okay, we're at this stage. Let's stop and evaluate before shipping. The downside of that, though, still is just that that's still too slow. And I prefer for security to actually feel more integrated. And waterfall can actually make security feel more distinct. And it still pulls us out. And that's part of the thing that doesn't excite me so much about waterfall still. There are some tools that I miss from waterfall days. Like I probably am one of those people that is, I still like ClearCase still has... Wait, hey, look, I'm old, man. I still like ClearCase. I still like Perforce.
Oh, wow. Okay, wow. Okay. Fair enough. I wonder how many people who are listening or watching this would actually know these. So I'll definitely encourage them to comment below if they actually know those softwares as well. But dude, that was most of the questions I had. Thank you so much for your time. Where can people find you on the internet if they want to connect with you on this?
Yeah, I'm pretty easy to find on LinkedIn. You can just search for Reddit CISO. That's actually pretty much it. You can occasionally find me on Mastodon, but I'm actually more tuning down a lot of my social media. Like right now, and actually for the last couple of years, Reddit has actually been my primary social media platform.
Yeah,
that's where the good conversations are going on. I'm in like security engineering. Obviously, I'm in like / cybersecurity, all the security. So I'm also in the / MMA subreddit and some of the things there. Yeah.
Awesome. I'll put that in the show notes as well. And maybe I'll check up the subreddit for cloud security. And because I know there's AWS security, Azure security, GCP security. I don't know if there's a cloud security one.
You should make one, man. Make one.
Create one. Why not?
Yeah.
But dude, thank you so much for your time. I really enjoyed the conversation as well. And I can't wait to have a part two of this conversation.
Yes.
A few years into the role as well. But thanks so much for coming on the show.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. And we are going to have you in person at one of our Reddit security events sometime.
I would love to do that as well, man. I think I'll definitely enjoy that. And considering now we're connected anyway, so there's definitely no escaping this. So definitely gonna, as long as you let me play the 90s hip hop music.
Yes, of course.
Yeah, we'll definitely do that as well. On that note, for everyone who's tuning in, we'll see you next episode. But thank you so much for joining us, and I'll see you next episode. Peace.